A chained prisoner stood before an illustrious ruler to plead for his life. The monarch trembled with terror as he listened to the words of the man who would soon be condemned to death. I'll return in a moment with the amazing facts about the prince and the pauper. Hello, this is Joe Cruz on the Amazing Facts broadcast, facts which affect you. There's a wonderful picture that I wish to paint for you today. Three people, one God's prophet, God's messenger, the other two a man and a woman who were living a very sinful life. Paul is in prison awaiting his trial, and these two want some new excitement, something to amuse, something to entertain. Time, though they live in sin, hangs heavily. They're spending their money for that which is not bread, and their labor for that which satisfieth not. These two want something else to excite, something to pass away the time. And so they send for God's prophet, that he might entertain them. The verse just before this says, he sent for Paul and heard him concerning faith in Christ. Now listen, it takes courage to preach to one man or to two people. There are those who can preach to the crowd, but it takes a man with a vision of the cross to preach to two people. To see that a little child may be a nation, and when we have the right spirit, we shall see in one person something worth preaching to. If one is sent to preach the truth, he must be unsparing and faithful. He must declare the whole counsel of God. It takes courage to preach to the man who sits in a high position, when he's close to you, when he's at his own house and sitting at his table. That was the picture. There sat Drusilla, there sat Felix, a prince, and here stood Paul, a pauper in terms of money, and he may have had the chains on him, the chains that told of suffering for Christ's sake. Paul never had a better chance than then of making a friend of one who could help him when the trial came on. His enemies were outside, his accusers were away. Those who were thirsting for his blood were not in this little quiet meeting place amongst the three. If he'll only flatter, if he'll only congratulate instead of expostulate, if he'll fawn upon Felix, if he'll compromise, he may capture this man at any rate, and he'll have a friend at court when the day of trial comes. But listen, Paul was not made of that material. He could suffer, he could die, but he could not sin, he could not tremble. His message was burning in his very soul. His message had come down to him as a thus saith the Lord. And he seemed to take in the whole situation and to realize that this was his only chance of dealing personally, pointedly, piercingly with this sinner in front of him and the other sinner beside him. And so he reasoned, of the cross, not to begin with, of the shed blood, not to begin with. Did he preach from this text, God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, not to begin with? Did he say, he that believeth on the Son shall be saved? No. He reasoned of righteousness. He talked about God's holiness. He talked about God's love for righteousness and holiness, and God's hatred for sin. And he made sin appear sinful. He did not excuse sin. He meant Felix to see and feel the awfulness of his own sin. So he reasoned of rightness, wholeness, godlikeness, purity. He brought him up to face the blazing light and the scorching presence of God's purity. He talked about righteousness. I don't think that that side of the truth in these days is presented as it ought to be, friends. You know God's love. What you need to be told is that God hates sin as much today as when Christ hung on those nails of the cross, and that he does not look on sin with the least degree of allowance or tolerance. Yes, he reasoned of righteousness to a man who was unrighteous. He talked about self-control, temperance, to the man who was intemperate and whose passion was running wild. The man within him was a riot. His whole being was in a state of anarchy, a rebel. And so Paul talked of righteousness and judgment. Friends, religion that honors God is right doing, walking straight, holding a constant witness to the cleansing power of the precious blood. It's not hunting up meetings and preachers and going to conventions, taking your pencils and writing down in little notebooks pretty little sayings, beautiful little extracts, pretty thoughts. It's letting them blaze in your life when the convention is over, when the meeting's passed, when the revival meetings are over. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 365 days in the year, all aglow, warm with holiness unto the Lord. Yes, righteousness. The kingdom of God is not meat and drink, but rightness, rightness. It's turning from darkness to light, from the power of Satan to God. It's the wicked man forsaking his wickedness and conformity to the will of God. Righteousness is not just going to church, friends, or being baptized or taking communion. All that will fall into the proper place. But first of all, righteousness, rightness, right relationship with heaven, readjustment with God, putting me in my right place with God, and God in His right place in me and in all my concerns. What we want, friends, is sin dethroned, self dethroned, Christ honored, Christ glorified, not only among the angels, but down here in the city, in your home, in your workshop, in your business. Rightness, righteousness in your yard measure, righteousness in your weights and scales, righteousness in your ledger, to handle your ledger with as much religious feeling and fervor as you take your seat in the pew on the Sabbath and handle the communion cup. This is what the gospel means. I tell you, this is a mighty sweeping gospel. It's an unsparing gospel where sin is concerned. He reasoned of righteousness, of temperance, and of judgment. Judgment, don't forget it. Judgment here and judgment yonder. Don't forget that God hath appointed a day in which He'll judge the world. Do not forget that there's a great white throne and that we'll have to stand before it. Don't forget that we shall stand as we are and not as we seem to be, and that we'll have to give an account of the deeds done in the body. And don't forget that it will not be a mock judgment. It'll be a righteous judgment. That God will be the judge, and that He'll render to every man according as his work shall be. Oh, to have listened to this preacher, to have heard Paul as he waxed fiery, flaming as he talked of righteousness and judgment. Oh, I wish I could have seen the flash in his eyes, and the pointed finger, and the erect figure as he shook, and the chains rattled while he lifted his eyes, he could, that hand, pointing to the great white throne. Oh, to have seen him as he peeled out the truth upon that man like a mighty thunderclap into his conscience and into his brain until he shook, until the seat shook on which he sat, until he clutched it and said, "Hold, that will do, Paul. I know it's true. I've heard as much as I can carry. I've got as much as I can bear. That'll do. Go back to the dungeon. It's not convenient. I know it all. I feel it all. I know what I ought to do. My soul, my conscience, my better self, my illuminated judgment, everything. God the Spirit, Your Word and Your presence, and these clanking chains tells me that I ought to be and what I ought to be before God, but it's not convenient. When it is convenient, I'll send for thee." Can't you hear him marching down that corridor? Can't you hear the rattle of those chains? Don't you hear the slamming of the door that shuts the old saint up? Glorious old Paul in that dungeon for Christ's sake. Listen, the slamming of that door is but the echo of another door which closed itself forever against those two when Paul was ordered off. When he went, their chance went with him. Oh, how different the story might have read. How blessedly it might have ended. How triumphantly it ought to have ended. But the man hugged his sin and would not yield. Now, why did not Felix become a Christian? He might have been an apostle. He might have been an evangelist. Why, he could have written an epistle. It takes a saint to do that, and he might have left a message that would have blessed the world. He might have left a decision that would have been an inspiration for all time, but he went the other way. He decided against Paul and Paul's Christ. And surely, if any man in the world ever had a fair chance of salvation, Felix had it. With the world shut out, and with that great soul winner in front of him, with nobody to interrupt, nobody to come between, nobody but Paul and his master facing him, and the plan of salvation in front of him, and the heavens opening above him, and the light streaming down upon him, and God speaking through his saint. Surely no man ever had a better chance of life eternal than this man. Surely, my friend, you cannot look in the face of God one day and say, "I should have been a Christian if I'd had an opportunity." You cannot say that because you have this blessed hour in which to yield to God. If you never had a chance before, you have one now. And if you never had anybody to talk to you about these things, you have somebody now. You cannot plead at the great white throne that you never had a chance. Felix cannot. Surely no man ever had a better preacher than Paul, the prince of preachers. There was no trimming about Paul. There was no stooping to suit his people. He was not afraid of the man in the chariot. He didn't despise the man in the gutter either. He said himself, I determined to know nothing among you save Christ and him crucified. There was no water and milk gospel with Paul. It was the pure, unadulterated, unchanging, living message. Surely you cannot say when you get to the white throne, if you have not a wedding garment on, you can't say, oh, if I had only heard the pure gospel, I should have been saved. No, you can't say that. You're hardened by the process of listening to it. For this mighty gospel, what it does not soften and weld, it hardens. It's a savor of life or of death. You know that, and you're familiar with it. Surely this man might have been saved, for he was convicted. He felt more than he wanted to feel. He trembled. But mark this, he trembled, but the woman did not. That's striking. I've often seen two people sit together in the same sermon. And I've seen one shake and tremble and weep beneath the power of God. And I've seen the other rebellious and hard and hindering. I've seen one want to come, and I've seen the other pull him back. When a woman does set herself against God, she does. I've not been an evangelist for 40 years without finding out that when a woman does come to Christ, she comes all the way. I believe this man would have been saved but for that woman. Felix trembled. She did not. He felt. He was convicted. He was awake. He knew. He was concerned. He was wrought upon. Haven't you been there, friends? Is not your conscience with me at this moment? Don't you feel your sin? Don't you see how it's spoiling you, how it's robbing you of your manhood? Don't you see how your life is embittered? Don't you see how it's leading you away from God and rightness? Don't you see it? I know you do. That's the Spirit at work within you. Your conscience and your judgment are bearing me witness. Don't you see that you can get as far as trembling conviction and yet stop and refuse to take the decision step? Why do you not yield? I want to push that question on till I get an answer. Why didn't Felix surrender? If he had heard the gospel from the lips of that faithful man and felt its awful import, if that stupendous opportunity was his in which he might have built a throne, why did he take the dungeon? If the hour was his in which he might have set an anthem ringing around the throne, why did he forge the chain? If the hour was his in which he might have decked the brow of Emmanuel, why, in the name of everything that's good, did he grovel in the dust and allow hell to drive over him its chariots and grind him to powder? Why? Don't you see the deluding effects, the destroying effects of sin? The reason is given in one word, sin, his own sin. Beside him sat another man's wife with whom he was living. Are you surprised that Paul talked of righteousness? How could he talk of anything else? Could God smile on that? He talked of righteousness. I should think so. And Felix knew if he became a Christian, that woman must go home to her husband. At any rate, she must go from him. He knew that, and he looked at her. In that look, he lost his soul. He said, no, it's not convenient. When it is, I'll call for thee. But he never did. He never had another chance. Samson lost his strength through a woman. The daughter of Herodias danced Herod into the pit. Drusilla was the chain that bound this man for time and for eternity. Let me ask, what's binding you? What's fettering you?